Now back to Heat Wave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
Big game in the NFL afternoon matchup. Probably going to score huge ratings with two teams that were involved. Pittsburgh, New England, Tom. The Steelers, their first win over New England in 7 years. 17-10, they win over Heinz Field as they maintain their lead in the AFC North. Patriots, already playoff bound, Tom, but now losers of two in a row at 9-5. Your takeaways from this football matchup?
You know, I'm shocked that the Pittsburgh Steelers were the team that was able to elevate their game. Right? I'm shocked that they were the team to be able to do that. The Steelers are a team that in these spots traditionally in these spots have, I don't want to say let down, but, you know, shrunk into the moment. Antonio Brown didn't have a great game. Juju didn't have a great game. Big Ben didn't have a great game. What we learned about the Patriots, though, is you can run on them no matter who you are. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, you can run on this Patriots team. I also think that we certainly realize that Gronkowski's just not himself anymore. You know, we are in a... I didn't draft him this year, Gronk, after having him for like 5 years in a row. When I've had championships, he was the guy doing it. And, you know, you started to see it before the year. I felt so good that I didn't take Gronk this year. He was absent today. And he's been absent in big spots so much lately. So much lately that it shocks you, doesn't it? And I just believe that that is such a massive difference maker to somebody like Tom Brady. You know, Brady's out there doing things with running backs that aren't really running backs, right? Rex Burkhead was a backup in Cincinnati. White is generally a one-dimensional running back. He's doing it with backup running backs. He's doing it with beaten-up, small, you know, shifty-type receivers like Hogan and Edelman. And the offense hasn't been able to kind of grow into the Josh Gordon mold. What he always relied upon, and he did it a couple of times tonight, was in a big spot inside the 20. I can go to Gronk, biggest mismatch on the field, and he doesn't have that now. So when you're going in between, you know, the 20s, it's generally easy to do slanting patterns, crossing patterns, Edelman across the middle, Hogan, things of that nature. You know, White outside, Burkhead, you know, with a 5 yard out. You can have fun on those little short, little dink and dunk patterns inside the 20s. When you get into the red zone, though, that's where you need that big target. And whether the big target be a guy like Alshon Jeffrey, you know, a big wide receiver that goes up and gets it, or a guy like Gronk, Brady needs that at this point. Do I think that Brady's skills are declining? No, I haven't seen that this year. But I also know that they're not where they once were because Brady has to get creative out there. And right now, where he is reliant upon, where do I go on a, you know, first and goal from the 7 yard line? Who am I looking at? You're not looking at Edelman, you know, because in space, he doesn't get open. Edelman never has huge touchdown numbers. Josh Gordon just isn't the guy quite yet. And Gronk is banged up. And I think that's a huge hole that they have to address, a massive hole that they have to address very quickly if they want to do something in the playoffs this year. And long term, this is how this offense is built. You can't have a Gronk less than 100%. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from the game for me, is just how banged up and beaten down Gronk looked.
Yeah, we've seen that happen here over the most of the season, Tom. And
he never catched till the fourth quarter, Tim.
No, and you saw, and I know that late in the game, obviously, Tomlin's smart enough to know that Brady is going to look for him, and they doubled him. I think on one of the plays, he was tripled, actually. And I know that comfort.
And Brady's still trying to feel it in, right?
Right.
I know the play that you're talking about.
Right.
He still looked to Gronk first call, even though he was triple teamed.
Yep. I think, and once again, I agree with you 100%. I would never doubt Tom Brady, because you just don't doubt what he's done. But he had a bad interception in this game that he usually would throw the ball away, right? We know that. And then at the end, the way Edelman was eating him up, I just don't know why he just didn't go to that well. But I think that just the comfortability of big game wins and going to the big guy just sets in his mind. But I think maybe Edelman or even Patterson probably would have been a great option off the decoy.
Yeah, that certainly could have been. Yeah, you know, we could doubt Brady all we want, you know, and people are. I'll tell you what, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but this is the second week in a row I'm disagreeing with Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. I'm disagreeing with, I didn't like, I think he was the error where they lost to Miami. Having Gronk back there as a tackler in a situation where you have Ryan Tannehill, who was on one leg, he's not going to reach the end zone. You know, I thought that was a strategic mistake by Belichick, and I could probably count in the last decade how many of those he has on one hand. But that was a strategic mistake by Belichick. And tonight, in the fourth quarter, those plays that were called, I think, were strategic mistakes. I can go out there and say, I think Bill Belichick dropped the ball in the last two games. And when that has traditionally happened, I'm going to go do my research, Tim. But when that traditionally happens, game three for the opponent becomes ugly. New England's a 13-point favorite over Buffalo. If this was a 20 mark, I'm not sure it would be enough.
On December 16th now, as we have two games left in the regular season, and you know, it's safe to say, Tom, I assume both teams will be in the playoffs. Are these two teams battling it out in the AFC title game?
No, absolutely not. And I think less of the Steelers. I think the Steelers are still out of sorts. I mean, look, you could look at the Steelers coming into this game with a three-game losing streak. They were very close to losing this game. Okay, this was no, you know, walk through the park. It was a nice win. I'm not taking anything away from Pittsburgh, but they were close to losing this game. They showed a lot of vulnerability. The Pittsburgh Steelers are offensively challenged at this point, if you could believe that statement. And somehow they got out of here with a win. Okay, they also got out of Jacksonville with a win that they did not deserve, against a terrible Jacksonville team so far this year. You're talking about a fluke play here or there away from a five-game losing streak. I don't think Pittsburgh is going to be anywhere near there. I look at Pittsburgh against Kansas City and having to go into Kansas City, I think they lose that game, and I'm not even that high on Kansas City. I don't think they beat the Chargers. I don't think they beat Kansas City. I don't know if they beat Baltimore if they face them in the first round, Tim. Mm-hmm. I know that I see them behind Houston. I think this is going to be a bad year for Pittsburgh, and I'll go out on a limb right now. It's a limb that I don't normally like to go out on. I don't think that the Patriots are even in the AFC Championship game unless they get home field. I don't see them being able to go into Kansas City right now. And again, I don't like Kansas City that much because what I've watched out of Mahomes is he can't win the big game because he hasn't. But I don't like the gauntlet. The idea of Pittsburgh and New England is tied into the fact that they get a first-round bye because then you don't have to go through the three-game gauntlet. Even though they'll have one of those at home, it's a three-game gauntlet. I don't see either one of these teams represented in the AFC where it stands today.
And you mentioned Pittsburgh. So coming off a huge emotional win, right, Tom? The line is already out for next week's game. They're going to be in New Orleans. I'm looking at 6.5 for the Saints. The Saints still play tomorrow, and the line's already 6.5. We'll see, right? We'll see how they do on the turf against Drew Brees.
I have to see how the Saints look tomorrow night. I have slight concerns about New Orleans. I picked them to win the Super Bowl, and maybe I have more concerns than I potentially should have because of that. But they haven't looked good in a couple of weeks either. If they come out tomorrow on the road and you know, light it up and look like that Saints team again, I think Pittsburgh's in a lot of trouble. But we're watching these good teams at the end of the season sort of look a little sluggish. And the Saints have had, besides last year, the Saints have had years where that's happened, multiple years where that's happened, where they've looked a little sluggish towards the end of the year. Six is a big line for a game and a team that I'm not sure. I tend to lean the Saints. And they're at home and all that. But I got to see how they respond tomorrow.
Another team that looks sluggish, right, Tom? What did we see last tonight? The L.A. Rams drop another game, two in a row, as the Eagles bounce them 30-23. They're in Los Angeles. Goff looks like last year's Goff, Tom.
Yeah, he does. And again, as much as Goff did not look good tonight, I'm going to blame this one on McVay. Another week where everyone's going to jump on Goff, and I'm blaming this one on McVay again, 2 weeks in a row. Last week against the Bears, I didn't understand why he got away from the run. And he just, Todd Gurley had the least touches that he's had all year. And McVay came to the podium and said, yeah, we got to get him more involved. The first quarter tonight, Gurley was running all over the place. He looked unstoppable. And all of a sudden, when their backs are against the wall, he's putting his future, he's putting this year, he's putting everything into Jared Goff instead of into Blueley, which, you know, you go, why? What's going on there? I would have, when my back's against the wall, I would just be going back to Gurley, 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 and he didn't do that. Now, they have two absolutely joke opponents until the end of the year. So when they don't lose, you know, when they clean up next week and they absolutely go out there and blast the Cardinals, and then in the last week of the season at home they blast the Niners, everybody will go, well, everything's fixed. And I mentioned it last night. I said, guys, if the Rams struggle tomorrow, you better be very worried if you're a Rams fan, because that means that the Bears have given the blueprint. And this is a copycat league, Jim. You know that. The Bears gave the blueprint how to slow down and how to effectively stop the Los Angeles Rams. I think the Eagles used it tonight. Their banged up, terrible secondary was able to effectively end the Rams tonight. And I'll tell you, the script is not that complicated, is it? Get in Jared Goff's face, he panics, and he's not that good of a quarterback. If you could get a little pressure on him, the Bears got pressure tonight. Philly got pressure on him. He panicked. He made giant mistakes. And you look at who they'd have to face in the playoffs. Those teams are definitely going to be able to put the pressure on him. Where I stand today, this is not an overreaction. This is a reaction of what I told you, how I would react yesterday. Where it stands today, I don't care what they do to Arizona, and I don't care what they do to San Francisco. I am worried if I'm a Rams fan.
And on the other side, you know, the Eagles, Tom, the defending champions, put themselves right back in the chase as they sit right on the outside, half a game out behind Minnesota. When you see Philly and the issue with Wentz now, so Foles back in the mix, it's almost like deja vu from last year. They have an interesting matchup next week at home against Houston.
It's so interesting now, right? I mean, it's so intriguing. This last playoff spot in the NFC, nobody wants. You have Carolina, who's in it, but they've lost five games in a row. They got to play the Saints twice in the next couple of weeks. How are they in it is beyond me. Minnesota is in it, and then you have Washington and the Eagles. Washington, somehow or another, is in this thing, which is crazy. Minnesota looks like the odds-on favorite, but it's not going to take a lot to turn the Eagles into a 9-7 team. You said it. Look, Nick Foles gives them some kind of energy. The question that I have now, I don't think that they could do much. I think they had, you know, their moment here. I don't believe that they could sustain for 3 weeks. And it's not a matter of Nick Foles. It's a matter of that defense. I don't think that defense can hold up. But if Nick Foles, Tim, you know how much I love Carson Wentz. If Nick Foles wins three games in a row here, gets Philly into the playoffs, I'm not saying a Super Bowl run. Let's say they win a playoff game. What do you do next year? I mean, don't you have to start thinking to yourself, maybe Nick Foles is our best option?
The reason why they didn't get rid of him, Tom, I don't know if it was they didn't think the value coming back was going to be worth it, but, you know, he's still there, and it may play into their – they make the playoffs. Yeah, what do you do? I think Wentz, I still say you go with Wentz, but if they win the Super Bowl again, what do you do? Is that what you're saying?
I don't even think it has to go as far. Look, if they win the Super Bowl, I have to say, there's got to be no way that you take Foles away. There's just no way that you could take Foles off this team if they win the Super Bowl. But I'm not even talking about Super Bowl, Tim. They have next week against the Texans, and then they have Washington, which could be a play-in game for the playoffs. They make it into the playoffs, okay? In the first round of the playoffs, they go out there and they play the Bears, okay? The experience, let's say, gets Philly past the Bears. Then they go out and they go on the road and they play, we'll say, you know, this Rams team again. They get that win. They go to the NFC Championship game. They lose the NFC Championship game. But Nick Foles now has taken a team from dead and buried to winning five games in a row, including two playoff games. I think that's enough to have the conversation. Hell, they might only need to win one playoff game and have that conversation of, what do we do here? What do we do? Carson Wentz is our future, but the guy has a long injury list, a long history of injuries. You could get, I mean, an absolutely monumental haul back for Carson Wentz if you ever dared dangle him, way more than you would get for Nick Foles. I'm not saying that it should happen, but it's a conversation that has to be taking place if what we watch tonight is able to be extended. Now, I don't think it will be. I don't think that this Eagles team can win next week against Houston. I think that kind of closes the book on the conversation. But if it does, I mean, we're talking about, you know, three wins is not that much to ask for. If they win a playoff game this year with Nick Foles at the helm, it will be near impossible to reinsert Carson Wentz into the starting rotation week one next year, won't it? How do you sell that to the fan? How do you sell that to your players?
I almost want to see it happen, just to see. Because you're right, the return on Carson Wentz on the trade market would be... You almost have to do it, right?
Hey, Gruden, how about give me your entire draft, the Ricky Williams style, right?
Yep.
But give me like seven draft picks for Carson Wentz.
Yeah, maybe we're silently wishing that, Tom, to see what would happen if that comes to fruition. But
you accusing me to wanting chaos? Yeah,
that's, of course.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's do one more, and we'll take a timeout. Stay with the NFC. Vikings up and down this year, Tom. Kirk Cousins comes in, big-time money. He looked good today as opposed to previous weeks where he didn't, but they get it done at home as they bookend the Dolphins with a big first and fourth quarter, scoring 38 of their 41 points in the first and the fourth. Dolphins coming off a big win, and I went, theory-wise for me personally, I went Dolphins, huge win last week. Now they got to go on the road. I love the Vikings in this game, and it was a runaway game in the fourth. My thing on this one is, and we'll throw a little fantasy spin into this, Tom, because it affects our league. 3 weeks ago, with James Conner injury happening and him being out the last two games, I went to the waiver wire, and Dalvin Cook was sitting there, Tommy, and he was the best available, right, in our league. And so I swapped him up. He has put me into the finals now, basically. And it's crazy. I saw a debate. I guess this is more of a fantasy conversation, but I saw a debate online with teams that go in, play the whole season, great teams, they get in the playoffs, injuries happen, and a subpar team ends up, you know, going on to win the championship. And not saying that my team is subpar because, you know, a lot of us had good records this year, but isn't it crazy how a guy like Dalvin Cook, who wasn't a first-round pick in any league, is now basically being a guy that's leading the charge for a lot of teams out in the fantasy world?
Well, you know, the fantasy community was losing their minds today because of how many big stars just did not compete. It is crazy. I had Mike Randall on. You know, he's a big fantasy guy, writes for whatnot. But Mike Randall said, you know, making the fantasy playoffs, pure skill. Winning the fantasy playoffs, pure luck.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, my number one player, the guy that has put, you know, I've just been carried by him all year long with Saquon Barkley. Got 9 points today. Kyle Fairbairn, the kicker, got 19. I'm basically going to lose because of a kicker. You know, and you go, are you kidding me right now? Yeah, and it is. We have been, me, you, the top four teams have been getting 200-plus points every week for the last month and a half. 200, 200, 200. None of us are going to hit 200 points this week. But we might not hit 190, and somehow or another we're going to have a championship game.
And in another league we're in, the first one I was in with you, Tom, this year, the bottom four seeds, eight make the playoffs, the bottom four seeds in the first round knocked out the top four seeds.
Yup. Yeah, the number one, two, three, and four teams go down. Thanks, Russell Wilson.
Take a quick timeout. Still more NFL football to go, and stay tuned. still talk some baseball in hour three. Tom was in Vegas last week for the Major League Baseball winter meetings. We'll get his first-hand analysis of that. All to come here as we hit the halfway point on Heatwave Sports on a Super Sunday night, Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, everyone. This is Carrie Walsh Jennings, and you are listening to Heatwave Sports on Fox Sports Radio.
Now back to Heatwave Sports. Here's Tom Barton and Tim Unglesby.
Moving through the rest of Week 15 in the NFL, Tim Unglesby, Tom Barton, Ari Platinum, Heatwave Sports. Tom, the Tennessee Titans, goose egg the Giants today, 17-0. They moved to 8-6, and a Tennessee team that, you know, you blink an eye, and all of a sudden, Tom, they're right there.
Yeah, you know, listen, I thought that they should be there. I think they're so much better over the last couple of years. They're so much better than what they show. They play down to their competition. Maybe it's finally coming together. Look at their roster, Tim. Okay, and I know that it's got its inconsistencies, so I'm not going to sit here and gush over them. But I want to just explain to people, Marcus Mariota was the number two pick in the draft, and many people like me thought that he should have been the number one. Okay, he is that talented of a quarterback when he is healthy to be a number one pick. Now, I did say, if you remember, you go back to the Wayne and go, I said, Winston and Mariota, neither one of them will ever win a Super Bowl. Neither one of them will ever win an MVP, okay? But Mariota still has massive talent. Derrick Henry was a top pick. This guy should be doing what he's done in the last two games, which is six touchdowns. He should be doing that every week. Deion Lewis is a fantastic player. Corey Davis was the number one wide receiver taken, a top 10 pick. They have massive offensive linemen led by Taylor Lewan, who is a top 10 offensive lineman in the league. I mean, this team graded out last year, offensive line-wise, as number four overall. They have massive talent on both sides of the ball. You want to get to Casey and Moore on the defense. They just seem to play down to teams. They played down to the Giants today. I know the Giants could have been, you know, explosive. They could have been dangerous. They could have been the same. But with no Odell in a rainstorm, they focused in on Barkley and shut him down. This is a Tennessee team that just confuses me. And I've been saying constantly, week in and week out on my New York show, I say, guys, they are the most confusing team in the league to me. And they are the most confusing team in the league to me. They just are. If you want to sit here, Tim, right now, and make a compelling argument to me that Tennessee could go to the AFC Championship game, I'm listening to that argument. If you want to tell me that they lose the next two games and they finish under 500 and don't make the playoffs, I go, yeah, I'm listening to that argument too. They have confused me all year, Tim, and they continue to confuse me.
And they are a 10-point favorite at home next week against Josh Johnson and the Washington Redskins.
I mean, they should be 10-point favorites, but Washington's just doing things that it's almost home to watch them because nobody believes in this Washington team. And they still have good things like a defense going well. Washington's another confusing team, though. They get trounced by 40 to the Bears the week before. Josh Johnson's learned. The offense, this is him telling it. He didn't know players on the team, so he learned the offense by playing Madden a couple of times. So he would learn the personnel that he'd be playing with. I mean, this is real life, guys, and the Washington Redskins go out there and win a game this week on the road, no less, against a defense, no less, than it was considered the best defense in the NFL last year.
Something tells me, though, that it's an ugly game. I know... Everybody's talking about what Henry's done here in the last few weeks after virtually being non-existent all season. And now they're on a roll, right, Tom? And you mentioned the Josh Johnson effect, a 50-year-old running back in Peterson there, a lame duck coach there in Gruden. Something tells me I just see ugliness next week in that football game.
Well, you know, today's over-under in Jacksonville was 36, Tim. 36. You know, next week, what are we going to see is the over-under in that game? You know, 35, 36? What do you think, about the same?
Yeah. 36, 37, something like that, I would assume. I like it under, right? Isn't that just the way you have to think about it?
You got to have guts to take those unders, but today with it, 36, and you still had a touchdown to play with.
Yeah.
They only reached 29 combined. I took the Bills and Lions under today, under 40. I had 13 points to be able to play with. They only scored 27 points. I get it. Unders are tough. You know, unders are tough to take. Bettors do not like unders. But, yeah, next week, that screams under all day.
The only thing worse than a Packer fan, Tom, is a Cowboy fan. And
oh, by the way, I'm sorry, Tim. 37, it just opened up at 37, minus 115 on the under, so it'll probably be about 36.5 by the move.
There you go. So the only thing worse than a Packer fan is a Cowboy fan, right? The way that they don't understand the present. They only want to talk about wins. They never admit losses, and then it's about history after that. Dallas has been on one of those little runs, right, Tommy? Pushes himself back in divisional lead, playoffs, and then they go to the road to take on Andrew Luck today, who didn't even throw a touchdown, Tom. I don't even think he broke 200 yards, but they couldn't stop the run, as Mac has been a Mack truck, let's put it that way, the last few weeks for the Colts. Another shutout, back-to-back, and we're going to talk about shutouts, Tom. The Colts 23-0 over Dallas. At least we can shut the Cowboy fans up for a week.
Well, this was not a surprising win. I like the Colts quite a bit. There were some key injuries here that people don't realize. Ryan Kelly was back for the Colts. When Ryan Kelly is in the game for Indianapolis, he's the center from Alabama they drafted in the first round 2 years ago. When Ryan Kelly's in the game, the Indianapolis Colts average 5 yards per carry on the ground. When he's out, 3.4. That is a huge thing. On the other side, Zach Martin was out for Dallas, which was a big effect. I'm not shocked that Indy won at home with those two injuries going on, but I'm shocked that Dallas got completely shut down. Indy's defense isn't that good. I mean, it's solid, but it's not that good. It's not good enough where it should be shutting a team out like this, and that's exactly what they did.
What do you think? Dallas next week, it's touchdown favorite against Tampa. They're back at home, and then you have the Colts. Also, in a situation next week where the playoff spot, Tom, you talked about earlier, they're right there chasing Baltimore for that last spot in the AFC side of it, and they're going to be at home, and they're pushing double digits against the Giants.
Yeah, well, the Giants, again, if Odell comes back, they're a dangerous team. Mm-hmm. And they're a team that they're having a little fun. Now, I know it didn't look good today. Indy is a very good team when they have things going. They're extremely good. Andrew Luck is fantastically good at home. I think they win the game. But if Odell comes back, it's going to be tough for this defense to stop Saquon Barkley. I actually think that the Giants can keep it within the number.
And Seattle, Tom, hit a little hiccup in the road. They've been playing some good football of late. They go to San Francisco and get beaten overtime 26-23. They still are locked in right now as the 5 seed. And I think for me, from what I saw and what I've seen in the past few weeks with Seattle, maybe it's just a bad game for them. And it's even a bad game that they still had a chance to win.
Yeah, it was. This is a weird game. Their defense just didn't show up today. And maybe the score doesn't show up, but every single time, Nick Mullins was just converting big play after big play. But the story of this game here, Tim, was not even the defense. It wasn't that Wilson didn't play well. It was none of that. The story of the game is that the Seattle Seahawks committed 13 penalties to close to 150 yards. They had 4 15-yard penalties on one drive, one touchdown drive. 4 15-yard penalties. The following possession, 2 15-yard penalties. I mean, they gave up 6 personal foul penalties in a matter of minutes to this team, and it was just that kind of day. Even a guy like Bobby Wagner, they tied the game. They had San Francisco, back all the way back within the 5-yard line. Third down, Bobby Wagner, face mask call. Then, at the end of the game there, with under 2 minutes to go, Russell Wilson hits C.J. Procise on the sideline, or McKissick, on the sideline for about a 45-yard pass, putting Seattle in winning range. Look, they were on the 32-yard line at that point. What happens? Of course, 15-yard penalty. Now, you're talking about that's a 65-yard
swing in possession. Instead of being first down, minute and whatever, 50 to go on the 32-yard line, all of a sudden you're third down and 19 from your own 20-yard line. Massive swings in the game because of just undisciplined penalties.
I think, what, sloppy probably would be a good way of describing Seattle. They're just sloppy.
Yeah, it was you know, really, really sloppy. I can't remember a contending team. Because, you know, you get Bengal games like that and Raider games where, you know, guys just are all over. I can't remember a contending team. A contending team that looked as bad, you know, discipline-wise.
So next week, back at home, this will be the Sunday night game. Kansas City comes to town, Tom, and looks like we might be able to get a field goal by game time.
This is a tough one. I mean, I showed everybody the numbers. 2 weeks ago, I took Seattle in that sloppy game against Minnesota. I was sitting there in Vegas, and everybody that asked me, who do you like? I said, Seattle's 15-2. Prime time, all time under Pete Carroll at home. So now they're 16-2, Tim. I believe everyone's going to be on KC. And there's good reason to be. But there is a reason why Pete Carroll 16-2 at home in prime time. There's a reason. And this is not a fluky thing. 16-2 is 16-2. But I'll tell you what, Seattle hasn't looked good for 2 weeks. They had no right to win that Minnesota game with the way their offense played. Their offense has played pretty poorly the last 2 weeks. Kansas City got extra days rest. If there's ever a team to go in there and to go against that trend, it's probably Kansas City.
And anything on the money? I know you touched on the Saints. You're going to see how they come out on the road tomorrow against Carolina. Also hanging on to they're trying in that chase for the six. They need a win to stay current with the likes of Washington there and Philadelphia.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it'll be an interesting situation if New Orleans loses. Right now, they are pretty much guaranteed the number one overall seed because the Rams are now effectively two games behind them if they win. If the Saints lose, and maybe I'm talking as a wishful Chicago Bears fan, but if the Saints lose, you're not only talking about the Saints and the Rams you know, battling out for the number one seed. You're talking about maybe, one of them doesn't even get a first-round bye week because the Saints road right now, they're pretty tough. You got Panthers twice at Panthers and then the Steelers in between. Do I think that the Saints lose three in a row? Absolutely not. Can it happen? Yeah, it definitely can. On the road against your rival and then against Pittsburgh, and then again against your rival, 11-2 with hopes of a 14-2 season can very easily turn into 11-5, can't it? And the same thing with the Rams. The Rams are sitting here at 11-3. They got the Cardinals and the Niners. Now, I don't think that they'll have trouble with the Cardinals, but it is a road game, right? And then you get the Niners, who just upset Seattle, and they're going to be playing their tails off. All of a sudden, you look at the Bears, and you go, geez, is it possible the Bears could get the number one overall seed? I mean, you really have to start taking that into consideration.
Tommy, it's going to be a crazy next 2 weeks. In fact, when we talk again on Heatwave Sports, it'll be playoff time.
It will be playoff time. I mean, it'll be a wild weekend next weekend. And I call this weekend elimination weekend because I really thought that that's what it would be. This is setting up. And as a sports fan, you got to love this. As an NFL fan, it happens so rarely. This is setting up as us having real, serious, meaningful Week 17 football. Yeah. And I love that.
Agree 100% with you on that. So when we come back, Tom, we're going to talk about UNLV basketball. I was at the T-Mobile Arena last night as BYU came to town. The Rebels get a win. We'll break that down. And what's ahead for UNLV during the holidays? It's a trip to Hawaii. We'll look at that tournament and the possibility of who they play after their matchup with Hawaii on Saturday. It's Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio. We're back after this.
Now back to Heatwave Sports. Here's Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
talk UNLV basketball here on Heatwave Sports. Tom, the Rebels last night improved to 5-4 on the young season with a 92-90 overtime win against BYU here in Las Vegas over the T-Mobile Arena. Part of a four-team, it wasn't a tournament, it was just two games, as St. Mary's and LSU had a game right after. I know you talked about it last night, a day later. Your thoughts? The Rebels hit a buzzer beater to win in the overtime session. This was after blowing a 17-point lead at the half. And in fact, BYU had a look there at the end of the game when their best player, Hawes, had missed a shot to win it. And the Rebels were able to hit the big shot by Mr. Noah, a man of, I guess, a lot of critique over on the social media side of it. He sticks it in their face last night and gets the win for the Rebs.
Yeah, I think it's just as simple to say, nice job. Enjoy the moment. I told everybody, I'm not sure if you listened or not, Tim, I know you're getting out of there. I told everybody, enjoy the moment. Enjoy the situation. It was a really good win. It was a win that could energize a fan base, if there was one. It's a win that can energize the players in that locker room. It's a win that you like to get this as a springboard to go into conference play. But I'm not making too much out of it, Tim. You know, and you did it, by the way, they did it without their best player, which is huge. This is a big, big, big win. This is one of the bigger wins under the Marvin Menzies era, just because of how it happened. You know, it is a galvanizing win. If they had gone out there and won the game by 10 points, a win is still a win. But this is the kind of win where people get excited, people get entertained. You know, this is a galvanizing win. With that said, though, Tim, let's take it for what it was. You know, I believed in the media that this team would have a worse year than pretty much anybody out there in the media, right? I believe my projections were the lowest on the show. I believe that my projections were of anybody that I read, anybody that I heard. I only listen to, you know, radio shows that are on this network, right? Or, you know, so under the Lotus, you know, kind of umbrella, we'll say. I don't listen to the other random radio shows out there, but I think it's commonly fair to say I had them as a worse season than anybody else. With that said, Tim, okay, they're only about a game off of the projections that I had. Going into conference play, I had them a game worse than they are right now. So let's not make too much of it, about it as it is. If they go out there and they lose to Hawaii, if they go out there and they even play well against Hawaii, but they get the L, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about this team now? How do you feel about, you know, going out there and saying, okay, well, that was a huge win. If you lose to Hawaii, Tim, it just sets you into a position where you go, okay, kind of same old Rebs. Now, if they beat Hawaii, which is a very winnable game, okay, they go out there and they beat Hawaii, now all of a sudden you got two wins in a row. Now all of a sudden you got a little bit of momentum. Now all of a sudden you can say, okay, we could build off of this. With the Rebels over the last, what, 5 or 6 years, I've continued to say, it's not really how you react, it's how your reaction is off of a win or a loss. A single win or a loss is not going to do much for you. It's how do you react off of this. How will that go? And consistency is the key. They've got to go out there. They've got to beat Hawaii for this win to mean more than just a one-day good feeling.
I agree. And from what I saw, this is a team of two halves, obviously, indicative by the score, Tom. And they could not miss in the first half. They shot the lights out. And here's the thing, you know, I'm sitting in the Menzies press conference, and he even said, you know, with Justin being out, and that could be, you know, they're going to look at it here, I guess, tomorrow, but this is anywhere from he could come back to he needs surgery to end the season, and that changes things dramatically for the Rebels. But, you know, we'll wait on when the decision is made on that and how bad his knee is. But with him not being in, they had to change the game plan a little bit, and you saw the guards pick up a lot more of that scoring. So last night, Hardy had 21, which he's, in my opinion, the best player on that team. Clyburn stepped up at 21, you know. Those guys, it changed the flow of it. And you know, I think maybe that with BYU coming in and just being shell-shocked by the fact the Rebels were just hitting everything. We saw in the second half the adjustments made at the half that Dave Rose, the coach of the Cougars, made. and maybe not so much the adjustments that Menzies had made, Tom. They caught him, had a chance to win it. They didn't. They went to overtime back and forth, and they hit a shot. You know, that shot doesn't go in my opinion, 3 out of 10 times. So it is like what you said. It's a nice win to put on the schedule. What does it mean at the end of the year? We don't know, because I think BYU is probably at best the third best team in the West Coast Conference anyways. You know, all that's determined here in another 25 or 30 games. But you're right. They're going to go to Hawaii now. This is a game that, yeah, it's in Hawaii's backyard, but I still think the Rebels should be a small favorite. It's a game I think they should win. They win, they get Colorado most likely, Tom, in the second round. And now you're talking about, you know, another level of caliber of opposition.
Well, yeah. You also have to wonder, and I alluded to this last night, and I mentioned it. I got some people hit me up on Facebook afterwards. I'm sorry, on Twitter afterwards, Tom Barton Sports. 876-1340, by the way, guys, you want to be a part of the show, 876-1340 or Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. And people hit me up and said, you know, it was a little unfair. But the reality is what it is. There are times, Tim, in all sports, where teams look better when the star player is out. But usually that only lasts a game or two, right? It gets the team energized. Usually, you know, you see a star quarterback goes out. Well, the team rallies. Oh, my God. This star player goes out. You know, LeBron's out. Well, the Lakers rallied and won. It's not going to last long. You know, and I worry about that with this team. Did they just rally for that game, or are they able to take a step up without their best player and still continue this?
Tom, I don't know if you saw this bracket. If the Rebels can get through, there's a potential of TCU sitting there, Rhode Island's in the bottom side of that bracket as well. You know, for a holiday tournament, 8 interesting teams there, but if the Rebels can get on a little mini run here and somehow get into the final, it could be Jamie Dixon's Horned Frogs of TCU in the final.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
That'd be very interesting.
See where they stand real quickly at that point, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, moving forward after that, Tom, we're going to get into Mountain West play. And you know, now that we've seen a good 9-10 games from most teams, you know, you look at how they kind of match up in this conference. And again, we'll go back to what we said at the beginning. I haven't seen anything to me that says they're not middle-of-run pack team this year, and then that's being positive about it.
I think they're lower than that. I mean, I do. I think that they're going to be a bad team. I mean, just by every indication that I see, that this is not a very good basketball team. They had a good quarter and then an impressive overtime. Let's not overlook the fact, and I'm not trying to throw cold water on you. I told you guys, I give you all the credit in the world. Last night was a pure gutsy win. I give you all the credit in the world. But I'm not overlooking the fact that you gave up 53 in the second quarter.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, I can't, as a, you know, as somebody that can look at this thing from afar, great first quarter, loved everything we did. Unbelievable overtime, holding that team to 7 points was tremendous in overtime, hitting the shot, all of it. But I got to break down a 53-point second quarter, and I can't forget a 53-point second quarter.
Rebels in action at the Diamond Head Classic. They take on Hawaii on Saturday afternoon, and we'll see where they go from there after that matchup, possibly Colorado in round 2. We come back for hour number 3, Major League Baseball time. Talk about Tom's experience here in Las Vegas. It's Heatwave Sports. It's Fox Sports Radio.